We're studying the letter of Paul to a church in Rome. It's a church that needed the ministry of an apostle in order to properly be trained to follow Jesus. We are in the midst of a long section from chapter 9 to chapter 11, in which Paul addresses a burning question for the early church. And that is, if Christ is the fulfillment of the Old Testament, then how come the Jewish nation or the Jewish people as a whole were rejecting him? Lots of Jews receive Christ, of course, like Paul, for example, and there are always Jews who accept Jesus as Lord, but the nation as a whole was moving to reject the message of gospel grace in favor of a religion that favored law-keeping, like all other religions. Well, in chapter 10, Paul taught that the salvation proclaimed by the Old Testament, therefore by Jesus, did not come from building on the law, but rather from faith in God's grace, which subsequently frees us to willingly live according to God's will as a result. The salvation is open to all, Jew or Gentile, who call on the name of the Lord. And so this next section will pick up that thought and develop it. Romans 10 and verse 14. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? If you have to call on the name of the Lord to be saved, you won't do that unless you believe in the Lord. And you can't believe in the Lord unless you hear about him, unless you hear the gospel. And you can't hear the gospel unless someone communicates it to you. No message communicates itself. It has to be communicated by someone. He goes on, how can they preach unless they're sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. How could a message from God be communicated to people unless God himself sent somebody to do it? This is a statement of the divine source of the gospel. And those who bring such a message are like heroes, indeed. But not all the Israelites accepted the good news. For Isaiah says, Lord, who has believed our message? As we saw last week, the rejection of the gospel is not a new thing. Broken people naturally reject it in favor of a religion of works, because that's something we can control. That's something it depends on our effort. We think that's good. This was true of Old Testament Israel, as it is of any other people or ethnic group. It was the recurring complaint of Moses and the prophets all through the Old Testament. Consequently, faith comes from hearing the message, and the message is heard through the word of Christ. Paul pauses at this point to summarize what he's saying. And what he stated as rhetorical questions earlier, and now he just states as fact. In fact, the faith necessary for salvation requires the message of grace. And that message, the only message of grace the world's ever heard, is the gospel. But I asked, did they not hear? Of course they did. Their voice has gone out into all the earth, their words to the end of the world. Israel did hear the gospel. Paul and others have been preaching all over Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, covered most all the Mediterranean basin. Paul even quotes here Psalm 19, just as the sky proclaims God's glory over all the earth, the gospel has been proclaimed to virtually all Jews. Again I asked, did Israel not understand? First, Moses says, I'll make you envious by those who are not a nation. I'll make you angry by a nation that has no understanding. If Israel heard, was it possible they just didn't understand it? No, Paul says, because many Gentiles are having no problem understanding it at all. And they didn't have all the information the Jews did. In fact, this was repeatedly prophesied in the Old Testament. God's grace would make perfect sense to lots of people. So the point here is that Israel's rejection of the gospel, as anyone's rejection, is not really an intellectual problem all the time. It's basically a spiritual one. And Isaiah boldly says, I was found by those who did not seek me. I revealed myself to those who did not ask for me. But concerning Israel, he says, all day long I have held out my hands to a disobedient and obstinate people. Isaiah could clearly see the day of Christ. He could see Gentiles pouring in to God's congregation, the New Testament word church, while God held out his arms in vain to the people originally entrusted with his word. Bottom line, on the one hand, not everybody who hears the gospel message of grace will receive it. So the gospel is not, it's not sufficient. You have to believe, okay? But on the other hand, No one can be saved without hearing it. No one can be saved without hearing it. The gospel is necessary. It's necessary. Well, there's enough material in this passage for whole courses of study. Let's focus today on just one idea. How can they preach unless they are sent? What does it mean to be sent? First, sent has to do with the gospel message itself. We are sent to deliver the gospel because it is not our message. We are sent because it is God's message. It is his formal invitation home. It's his official pardon offered of sin. Try to think of the gospel as something you can enclose in an envelope that you can physically handle. It's there. You didn't make it. It's not your opinion. Now, its truthfulness has become your opinion through faith, but the message didn't come out of your head. There was a day when you received that envelope. There was a day when you received that message. It was delivered to you by someone, and it wasn't their message. It was God's message to you, right? Now, people may think that we're just arguing for our point of view or expressing our opinion. That's not the way we think of it. We must never think of it that way because we are not at liberty to make up what we say. I mean, we can use our own expressions and illustrations, but it's essential that we don't change the message because it isn't our message. Changing the content of the gospel is like a mailman opening up your envelope, scratching out some stuff, adding a few other things, sealing it back up, and delivering it to you. That's a crime, okay? The gospel is God's message. We are sent by him to deliver it. It may help to think of yourself as a messenger service. Now, representing Jesus involves a whole lot more than delivering his message. I mean, the testimony of our whole lives has an impact. But all our love and all our help and all our aid, all put together, does not bring with it the power to save anyone. Only the gospel has the power to save. So people have to hear it or learn of it some way. They can't assume it. You can't assume what's in God's mind. They can't figure it out. No other religion or philosophy will give it to them. You're not going to discover it on the national news or in the school syllabus or in your company email. No one else in the whole world has this message to deliver. No one else in all history. And among your own selection, of family and friends, perhaps there is no one else but you. But that's okay, because they got you. So first, sent refers to the source of the message. The second thing that sent refers to is the dynamic of actually delivering the message, okay? We each have a small galaxy of people that we know, and we live with them. We're in different roles. It could be a parent or a child, could be a sibling, could be an employer, employee, could be a friend, could be a neighbor. And God has sent the church to them by sending us to them. We are part of the church, and we know them. We're sent. He has entrusted us with his message to deliver, to make sure they get it. He does not ask us to convert them. He does not. He does not ask us to argue with them. Kind of forbids that. God wrote a message. He just wants us to deliver it. Why is that hard? Because we obsess over how to do it. We obsess over how to do this thing because we're so worried about results. We think that in doing this, we have been commissioned to be salesmen. It's fine to be a salesman, but this is not sales. Paul said that in Corinthians. He said, I'm not a salesman on the street trying to provide gimmicks to get somebody to buy something. I'm just trying to be honest. I'm trying to be open. I'm trying to be accurate, persuasive to the extent of answering questions. Getting results is not part of our charge. Mailmen and UPS drivers are not responsible for whether you like what they put at your door. Okay? They just aren't. And we forget that all the time. we obsess how to do something that's relatively simple. We're hoping to get a positive response, and so we're thinking of it that way. We want a surefire technique. We don't need that. The power is in the message. It's like trying to find just the right way to deliver an envelope. Our task is nowhere near as complicated as that. Just figure out something that makes sense for you. And then do it. You can just talk. You can just bring up the gospel out of the blue and talk about it. Not too many take this approach, but some prefer it that way. And if it works for you, great. Just do it. You could collect a dozen books that apply the gospel to a dozen trials that people typically face. And you got them ready to give away, along with the offer to practically help whenever you see any life crashing down on anybody in the community, anybody at work. You could give away the gospel 100 times. You can just pray for people diligently, expecting God to give you an opportunity to deliver the message, perhaps in response to some special occasion or a crisis. Maybe a book that celebrates a milestone by thinking about a person's life purpose. Or maybe a reference to a counseling or a peacemaking ministry where the gospel is. If we pray diligently, God will do something and we won't miss the opportunity. You can invite people to church services. Tell them, my soul is stitched together here at this church, and invite them to come. You can invite them to church activities where the gospel is part of a larger thing, like MOPS. Or divorce recovery, or BSF, or home Bible study, or adventure week. You can give them SPEP's internet information and encourage them to check out the church and its message in private at their convenience. You can host a Bible study in your home for 6 weeks to your neighborhood, and everybody can share everything they believe. It's fine, as long as they read the gospel before they're done. See, you've delivered the message. There's lots of ways you can do that. Some people here go into jails where people are incarcerated and share the word. Some do it with in homes where people are working through addictions. Some do it with very small children so that their first concepts of grace are accurate. Lots of ways. You can bring grace into discussions about politics or government. Everyone is talking about right and wrong, law. And you can talk about that too. But as God's representative, you could contrast the valid use of the law with God's offer of grace. You might be able to bring God's grace into how you structure and run a business. Think of how Chick-fil-A closes on Sunday and the questions that raises. You might pour your faith into artwork or music to share with your society. I know a woman who shares the gospel through poetry. It's quite nice. Or you might use a blog that you maintain on social media. You can create a complete personal testimony to be shared at your funeral. You can take advantage of Christmas and Easter to give a blessing to your neighbors and attach the gospel to it. You can include a Bible along with practical gifts that you give somebody just moving into your neighborhood. When a first responder saves you from something, then give them a gift along with a note about how God saved you too. Next time you can't get to church, plan a family worship time in which you, both parents, share what the gospel means to them and what it means and what it means to them. And if you can't think of anything else, just sit down with somebody or write a letter and say, I don't know how else to do this, but this is something I got to do. And just share it. You can even use what somebody else wrote. It doesn't matter. It's that they get the message. It's not about you. Just do something. Stop worrying about how to deliver the thing. Just do it. Now, ultimately, some of us must be sent outside of our own natural relationships. Now, you know I like to use diagrams. Sometimes I know they're very complicated, and this one's going to be a little tough, but just bear with me, okay? If people who know Christ are here, and people who don't know Christ are there, then someone needs to go from here to there. I know that's difficult. Let's try it again. If people who know Christ are here and people who don't know Christ are there, then someone needs to go from here to there. Got it? Well, work on it, work on it. What do I mean by these circles? The green circle represents a group of people that has a lot of Christians among them, like the United States. The blue circle represents groups of people who have very few or no Christians living among them, like Mongolia. Non-Christians who live in the green circle are likely to have the gospel delivered to them through their natural contacts with the Christians they know. We've been talking about that. That's where the church is active. People in the blue circle won't have the gospel delivered to them because there are no Christians among them, or very few. The church barely exists at all, and there is no possible way they can be saved if they do not hear the gospel. Now, you may say, what about mass media? Can they be reached through the internet, TV, radio? Well, yeah, they can maybe hear the gospel by such means, if they happen to see it, but they would still lack a person to explain the gospel, answer their questions, and demonstrate God's intentions by treating them with love. That blue circle represents so many different kinds of groups, not just nations, any group of people who have a limited access to the gospel message. It could represent, for example, a region of the country. It could represent a city or a town. It could represent a part of a town, a ghetto of some kind. It could represent a minority of some sort. It could be a group of refugees that are all from different nations and different cultures, but they're all uprooted. And there are very few, if any, Christians to share a message of grace at a time when they really need that. Any sort of cultural group which is distanced from the church, not physically distant, but distanced by a lifestyle issue or a political issue. And such issues may be very real and very biblically important. But the point is, there are very few, if any, Christians in their circle of folks that they would listen to or trust who are there to deliver them the gospel. The blue circle represents any group which for any reason just doesn't happen to have Christians in it, or very few. It could be a particular business community. It could be a government bureaucracy. It could be an educational institution. It could be an association of scientists or lawyers or dentists, a TV network or a government contracting place. It doesn't have to be anything anti-Christian about the group at all. It's just that it doesn't happen to have any or many Christians in it, to give them God's word. Now, traditionally, we use the word differently, but traditionally, we call it missions when a Christian intentionally tries to identify with, live with such a group, going from here to there, adapting to the culture as much as possible, intentionally loving in ways they understand so that he or she can deliver a message. You can send the gospel like a paper airplane over cultural walls through mass communication, and that's good because God can use it to spark an interest and people can reach out from inside. But when God has people available, he will still send them into these groups across the natural boundaries that define us. Could be national, could be linguistic, could be generational, could be socioeconomic. Our church in Sandtown was started by people from the suburbs who moved into that community, became part of it, and brought the gospel in with them. Missions can be a professional calling. It requires study, training, financial support. Our church supports over 24 professional missionaries. They may be sent to another nation, may be sent to refugees, may be sent to youth cultures. Professional missions is a big and expensive thing to do. Training, support, accountability is complex. That's why we have missions agencies, and then we have to support the agencies so the missionaries can be supported. Professional missions is not something you do lightly. It is labor and money intensive. But the need for professional missions will continue as long as there are places where the gospel isn't, and that's the best way to reach it. But missions doesn't have to be professional. Paul, for example, was not a professional missionary. He never trained or was supported to go cross-culturally. I mean, he had Roman citizenship. He was as much Roman as he was Jewish. He had his own business. He made tents. Now, the church initiated support when he was in jail and couldn't support himself, but otherwise, he supported himself. When we demonstrate that we are faithful to deliver God's message to people we do know, sometimes God sends us to people we don't know, across even our social natural boundaries, in a way that doesn't require any special support at all. You may find yourself volunteering in the inner city. You may find yourself volunteering in a youth ministry. For an older generation, that's a different culture, right? I met a pastor who spent several years going to state senate chambers, I believe it was in Louisiana, and he just prayed up in the balcony for an hour. He just did it. He did it for a long time. He wasn't politically active. He just prayed for him for an hour, and after several years, they got to know him. He became their chaplain. It's not his day job. It's not even his natural environment, but he's a non-professional missionary to them. Some of you will remember Barbara Black. Some of you won't. Some of you go back a ways, you will. I remember when Barbara first walked into our church, when we were meeting in the auditorium down there before this building. I watched her later as she came in with a cane, and then she came in with a wheelchair. And finally, when she couldn't come in at all, she couldn't leave her bed. She had MS. She was a delightful Christian who easily shared her faith. In fact, she told me that the MS helped bring her to faith. And her method of choice was poetry. Time came when she had to go into assisted living. With her resources, and in that day and time, that meant going into a nursing home. Can you imagine a relatively young woman with a keen mind living confined in a bed in a nursing home for decades? Well, some of us gathered around a few days before she went in. There's Walter, there's Doug, there's Julie in the back, and there's Barbara and her dad, Arch, and I'm behind the camera. We sent her in that nursing home as God's ambassador. It wasn't official. She wasn't ordained by any agency, but she was sent nonetheless. She was sent to reach the people of that nursing home, other residents, and the whole staff, reach them with the gospel, deliver to them God's message as his representative. We prayed for her. We prayed with her. We encouraged her while she was here locally, and some of those folks kept up with her even when she moved away some distance. Barbara was a non-professional missionary. She was sent to a culture that was foreign to her. In her case, she had no choice, but she did have a choice about her attitude and her purpose. I could give you a very similar story with Ed Bangs. More of you know him. Professional or non-professional, missions is essential until Jesus returns, because somebody has to be sent from where a healthy gospel witness is to where it isn't. God sends us to deliver his message. Your assignment's pretty simple. Find ways and just do it. Find ways and just do it. Does that sound harsh? If I were telling you to go out and convert people, that would just bring a huge amount of pressure. But we aren't called to do that. The pressure to convert people is something we put on ourselves because we care about folks. Well, yeah, care. But stop putting that pressure on yourself. Stop it. Of course, we're called to care and love people, but that's going to be true whether or not they ever respond to Christ. In terms of their salvation, we are only called to deliver a message. And if we have a chance, explain it. And then, of course, demonstrate it. Given the relationships that you have, given the personality you have, given the talents you have, just do whatever makes sense to you. I encourage you this week to write down 6 ways you could get God's message from God to a person that makes sense to you, that fit who you are. Use your words. Use somebody else's words. Get people together with other people who would talk to them. Support people that we send out to share. Whatever, whatever. Pick one of those ways and grab it and use it. Put yourself into it. If you do that, I can almost guarantee you, later on you're going to pick up another. Paul said that the gospel contains within it the power to save. Christian, let's all do our part to deliver the package.